This is Joe Basso from Music Radar, the place for music makers, and I'm speaking with Joe Satriani. Joe, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Joe. Nice to talk to you.
Nice to talk to you again. So you've just finished a big, was it a worldwide tour, a European tour?
Well, you know, it seems like a bit of a blur, but we were in Europe starting April 30th. We got back in the middle of the summer and then headed out to Australia, New Zealand, and then a winding trip through South America, went through Chile and quite a lot of Brazil, Argentina, played in Peru and in Colombia and in Venezuela, and then had a bit of a stay in Mexico, played a few shows in Mexico City, and then we've been home for about a week or two.
How did the shows go?
It was fantastic. I mean, when I look back, it's amazing we got through the whole thing. You know, from our perspective, the logistics are just crazy, especially when you fly all the time, you know, and you do 20 or 30 flights in 6 weeks, and at the end of it, you look back and you go, wow, we didn't miss a flight. The gear almost was at every show, but every show happened, and the audiences were great, and we had a great time, and everybody got home, so that's what a successful tour is, you know. It's one of those things that you really take it in after you're at home for a couple of days and you go, wow, that was pretty intense, you know.
Now, Stu Hamm was part of your touring band.
That's right, yeah. It's really been great. I mean, he wound up part of the band, not in the usual way, because we were actually rehearsing with a different bass player, and then all of a sudden we had a problem with scheduling that we could not overcome because Brad had this work that he thought he was going to be able to reschedule, and it didn't work out. So suddenly it was like, oh my God, we need a bass player, and we got like 4 days, you know. You know, in the back of my mind, I kept thinking, oh, it'd be really cool if Stu came around, and I hadn't really thought of that before because I guess I hadn't been in rehearsals, you know, and I hadn't really thought about where the show was going to go. But faced with this, you know, problem, and we were kind of sad to lose Brad, I started thinking, well, you know, if the show was going to take a different turn, who would be the guy to bring in? And so I gave Stu a call, and he was just at that point where he was about to, you know, write down and ink a bunch of his gigs that were piling up for the summer and the early fall. And luckily he said, I'll move it around if you want me to come. So it was like old times getting him back, and it really worked well. And I think that the stuff that he brings in, because he's such a different kind of bass player,
right.
He's got just a very different musician's approach to playing bass. I think it really added some new directions, especially to the live record that we hadn't really thought of before. So it's been really cool to have, you know, I mean, if usually you take care of all these things during rehearsals and or let's say during the making of a record. But all of sort of getting used to having a new guy in the band has happened in front of thousands of people every night. So it's kind of a cool way of doing it. It makes it a little bit more exciting. So,
was it hard for him to cram for this? I mean, he had to learn a bunch of new material and the new album.
It must have been. You know, I mean, he didn't complain, God bless him. And a couple of times he would give me that look like, because I'm notorious for putting the solos in some strange key, you know. I can imagine if you've only, you know, if you're trying to learn 25 songs in 4 days and the guitar players put all the solos in unrelated keys. At one point in the show, you probably go, is this the song where it goes to E-flat, A-flat, B-flat, or what, you know? But he didn't seem to have any problems with that, you know? I think all of us, you know, once we hit the stage, we realized that the real issue was, since we were playing so much of the new album, was how are we going to make this work on stage? And that is used, that's the central issue when you start a tour, because you really don't know. You have faith that everything's going to work out, but you really don't know. And, you know, after every show, everyone's talking about how this song or that song was successful, or this part of that song maybe we should change. So I didn't really think about that. I just assumed that there would be no problem, but I think that Stu made me feel that confident, you know, which is great. He never let me in on whether he was nervous or not about being able to remember all that stuff so quickly, you know.
Now, you have a new product coming out, and not the Saturator, but Ibanez is putting out your Black Dog guitar.
That's right, yeah. Well, you know, this goes back, I guess, about 2 years. We were planning on doing the Surfing with the Alien commemorative guitar. And I had talked to Rob Nishida at Ibanez about doing the commemorative Black Dog, you know, which was the name of my very first prototype guitar that became the JS line, you know,
right.
The basis of the JS line. It's going back 20 years. And that guitar, you know, was sort of a Frankenstein 540 radius with just, there were so many things about it that had been changed. There had been holes that had been filled and the thing had been painted many times. The neck had been shaved, frets. Everything about it was different except that the basic piece of wood came from the Japanese basswood stock and it was originally carved to be a 540 radius. And that was the guitar that I used to illustrate with scribbles every night before a show, and from 88 through 90, that became sort of like my main guitar, and it was photographed quite a few times by people who were curious about it, and then certainly for the back of Flying in a Blue Dream,
right.
That sort of set that look in stone, you know, especially for the fans. So the guys at Ibanez said, we'd love to see if something like this is possible, but no one knew how it was going to happen, and the idea brought to me was, you think you could do like 500 of those, you know? And I'm going, well, I do draw a lot, but that's a lot of work. You better give me like 6 months, you know, because I've got a record and a tour and all this other stuff going on. And so while I was waiting for them to sort of organize that, the NAMM show came, and I was backstage at Ibanez at the NAMM show. And Rob Nishida walked in and said, we want you to see something. And they give me this guitar, and I'm looking at it, and it looks exactly like my Black Dog, except it looks better, because it looks like my Black Dog looked back in 1990. And I'm looking at it, and for a second I go, how is this possible? Because I know the real Black Dog is sitting in my storage facility, and it doesn't look this good anymore because it had been stolen, and the thieves had rubbed off all the designs, and I'd redone it, and, you know, it had gone through changes already, and it was really freaky to see this thing that looked absolutely exactly like it did in 1990. And then he told me, well, this is what we did. We got all the best photographs of this guitar, you know, when it was illustrated by you at its perfect point, you know, and we hired a Japanese artist to meticulously copy it, you know, down to the last millimeter. And here it is. And so there I am. I'm looking at this beautifully illustrated guitar, and it's completely finished, so I don't have to worry about anything rubbing off. And it played like a dream because it was the one that we tweaked by hand before it hit any sort of, you know, laser lathe machine.
Right.
So it really feels like a handcrafted instrument. And I fell in love with this thing, and they said, well, you can keep it. And I've been playing it on tour every night since then. I guess every night that I play it, the instrument becomes more dear to me because the history of it starts to sink in more and more. The fact that that was the earliest prototype, that so many talented guys at Ibanez had their hands around that, carving that, sanding it, trying to get that neck to be exactly the way I wanted it to be. And all of the things that we learned about that guitar as a model came from that actual piece. It's just cool to look down and see all those scribbles. From an artistic point of view, it was a different phase in my illustrating life. So now it's available. I'm not too sure about how they work out taking orders. I do know that once you order this guitar, that there's a waiting period, but you wind up getting one that is, once again, it's hand illustrated by someone who is a true artisan in Japan, and they are copying, you know, as I said, every little nuance of that original
wow.
state, I guess, of that guitar, the way it was that one day in 1990 when it was photographed.